your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
Hi everyone, welcome to Special Presentation with Mike and Ethan, or...
Elf will not be seen tonight.
Now, since we got started, we've been looking for more and more obscure comic strip media to look for our episodes, because we know there's only so many Peanuts specials and so many Garfield specials, so we had to look for a richer vein. And today we are dipping our toe into the Blondie movie series, of which there are 20 fucking 8!
There are a lot of Blondie movies. People could not get
enough.
There might
be more Blondie movies than there are Marvel Cinematic Universe movies.
People could not get enough of these, I assume. Or at least the studios couldn't stop making them, so I assume they must have been very popular.
They came out 4 per year some years.
What a different world that was. When imagine 4 Blondie movies every year.
4 Blondie movies every year, and they're only an hour long. You know, it's like, would you go to the theater to watch 2 episodes of Full House?
Yeah, you know, that is the thing watching this Blondie movie that it really sticks out is when I was a kid.
At least one thing sticks out.
Not a whole lot in this. Not very memorable. But that's the thing about it that, like, kind of made me think. Because when I was a kid, right, I remember, like, you know, like, the idea that movies are made to be forgotten was very weird to me. Because, of course, like, you know, I would watch movies and it's like, you know, the movies I watch, I'd be like, oh, this is great. Everyone will remember this forever. And any old movie that I watched was a classic. So I would just kind of assume that every movie was made to be remembered for the ages, which, of course, is not the case. But, like, you know, things like... But I think when I first realized, oh, no, they make movies that are, you know, you watch it. You kill an hour or two, and then you never think about it again, and neither does anyone else in the world. As soon as it leaves the theater, it might as well never have existed. I think the movie that made me realize that was, I don't even remember the name of it, but it was a movie that I saw when I was in probably like maybe middle school. It was like, it was one of these kind of frothy comedies about like, oh, there are these 3 dads, and they like to meet at McDonald's to discuss the problems of raising children with one another. And, you know, it was like Paul Reiser and probably one of the, you know, one of the Baldwins was in it. So not like they were actors that are known, but like they were like, hey, we need to make they're working actors. They're like, we need to make money. So we'll be in some movies that, you know, just there to be there. But anyway, watching Blondie reminded me of that. It reminded me, like, oh yeah, there are movies that are just made, you know, they don't have any artistic merit. They're not intended to be remembered, even as, like, even a great comedy is intended to be remembered. This is not intended to be remembered. And, yeah, I don't think it is, because who remembers Blondie's Blessed Advent?
Good question, because, you know, I actually watched this with my mom, watching it next to me on the couch, and she was like, never again afterward.
Really? So she was not a fan.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie came out 2 years before she was born. So this was the world that she was born into, and she had no interest in revisiting it.
That's fair. It is from 1942, and it is the most 1942 movie. because it's, this is like before movies were really like, before movies were sophisticated. So,
yeah,
you know, they'd only been making movies for a couple of years at that point. So there's a lot of stuff that they hadn't quite figured out. And, you know, living in 2023, where movies are like, you know, pretty big events, you really feel that.
They've been making movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've been making movies for just under 50 years, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And talkies, even shorter. I mean,
that is right.
So that was a whole other... They had built this whole other idiom of how the movie's made, and then the talkies came along, and everything changed.
Yeah. In fact, to give you an idea of how few years had gone by since the advent of sound, apparently the guy who plays Dagwood in this, Arthur Lake, he was a silent film star before that. He appeared in Uncle Tom's Cabin as a baby.
Jeez, Uncle Tom's Cabin. That is a huge element of American culture that nobody dares to revisit. Nobody dares to make another movie about how slavery was bad.
Yeah, well, 2023 is a very different world, unfortunately. Sure, yeah, it's like 2023, like, well, you know, it's going to make us feel bad if we talk about how slavery is bad, you know, not like, but back, apparently back in 1910, they were fine with like, you know what, slavery is bad. We should say it. Some ways we've gone backwards, I guess, but,
You know, slavery is bad, but we don't want to hire any black people for this movie either.
Well, I guess, 1910 was, a certain level of wokeness.
Yes.
But anyway, so yeah, Arthur Lake, he had been in silent movies before transitioning to sound. And it sounds like he was one of the guys who actually made a fairly successful transition, because he was like in 25 of these Blondie movies.
Yeah. There are so many Blondie movies. In fact, to the point where they tried to continue them as Mr. Dithers movies after Blondie and Dagwood quit.
Wow. It's funny that, like, okay, here's the funny thing, I think. Because according to Wikipedia, Lake played Dagwood on the radio series, which ran concurrently with the film series from 1938 to 1950, earning Lake a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Many of the actors on the radio show noted Lake's commitment to the program, stating that on the day of the broadcast, Lake became Dagwood Bumstead. Far from being upset about being typecast, he continued to embrace the role. He played Dagwood in a short-lived TV series, and from 1960, he often gave speeches to Rotary clubs and other civic organizations, eagerly posing for pictures with a Dagwood sandwich. So, this guy totally fucking loved being Dagwood, but eventually it was even too much for him.
Yeah.
25 pictures was enough for any man, I guess, to be Dagwood.
Yeah. Have you seen these movies? I saw the addition they put on my house.
So we all know the Blondie comic strip. I think we've discussed it on the show a few times. So I don't know that we need to talk much about the comic strip.
If you don't know Blondie the comic strip, it's the one with the hot wife and the guy with antennae sticking out of his head, and he always knocks down the mailman and eats giant sandwiches.
Yes.
And that's all you really need to know.
No, that's the big thing about Blondie.
Those things were established in this movie from literally 80 years ago.
I get if it ain't broke, don't fix it. People still love seeing mailmans get clobbered. Mailmen, mail carriers. What? Pluralization is hard.
What's the gender neutral for mailman? Is it ungendered man?
I see what you did there. sorry. Now he. So the mailman in this, he does get clobbered. We see Dagwood eating big sandwiches. We see Dagwood asking for a raise. So very typical Blondie type things happening in this. The big difference between Blondie in 1942 and Blondie this year is that I guess Alexander and Cookie were not teenagers yet. Alexander was a child called Baby Dumpling for some reason. I assume that was a thing in the comic strip, which is weird.
Yeah, they called him Baby Dumpling for years and years until he finally grew up and they were like, okay, we're calling him Alexander now.
That is kind of strange to think about now, because that is something that has, I don't think anyone living today thinks much about the history of Blondie. So to realize that was kind of a major difference, but yeah, this is the movie.
Where he should have grown up to be, Dump Truck.
Big Dump. Instead of Little Dumpling. And Cookie is born in this movie. So that's what this movie is ostensibly about. Although,
I mean, they call it Blondie's Blessed Event, but that really doesn't really come up much.
No.
You know, there are a lot of times where I'm just like, you know, watching, you know, Dagwood running to stop someone from jumping out of a window, or, you know, getting yelled at by a maid. And I was like, Blondie's Blessed Event, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, Blondie has always been a more minor character in her own story than Dagwood.
Yeah.
So I guess it's to be expected.
Except for when it got started and she was the main character.
Oh, that's true.
And then Dagwood sort of urkled his way in front of her.
Yeah. This movie really doesn't go the direction that I thought it would. But which I can't say is good or bad, because didn't really have high hopes for the direction I expected. I kind of just thought it would be, Dagwood doing the thing where he's like, I gotta take Blondie to the hospital, and just falling down a lot. And he does take her to the hospital, but it's a very minor event. I thought that would be kind of the whole crux of the film.
Well, she's already at the hospital.
Oh, that's right. Like, so,
you know, this is, okay. This movie would make so much more sense if you assumed that cartoon tropes were real and the baby actually was delivered by a stork. Now.
Yeah. Well,
because we get a good look at Blondie and she is not fucking pregnant. Not even close.
Yeah, this is 1942.
Fucking Lulu from Final Fantasy X2 looked more pregnant than she did. This and if you don't know, Lulu did not, they didn't change the Lulu model at all.
Well, this is par for the course in the old days, where the censors would not let you show a pregnant woman on television.
You couldn't even say the word.
Yeah.
Lucy had to, there's one episode of the Lucy show where she says, I'm pre- and slaps her hand over her face because she can't say it.
Yeah, they really had to hide her pregnancy when she was on TV, which, so she's always standing behind like boxes and stuff. It was funny though, when Blondie makes her appearance and she is very not pregnant. And I was just like, oh, sorry, Ethan. It's like,
yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah.
It's like,
okay, let me,
cause we suggest, I suggest, okay, Blondie's right, Blessed Event. And I'm sure you were like, oh, interesting. And then it's like, oh
yeah. No, I didn't have high hopes, but no, okay. Okay, let's be honest. I have a pregnancy fetish. AMA.
Yeah, we have talked about it a few times. Or I think, like, I just keep obliquely referencing it. Because I'm just like, I'm just being a dick and outing
it. Well, we can't avoid it this time because this is such a big disappointment.
Yeah.
Even my mom was like, she doesn't look pregnant.
Yeah, it's like, they didn't even try.
Yes.
But it is.
I was like, there's a scene where Blondie was like, well, Dagwood, you'd think he was having the baby. And I'm looking at her like, yeah, I would.
Yeah. I mean, he does have all those like pregnancy cravings with the giant sandwiches and everything. So we mentioned Arthur Lake becomes Dagwood. And
yes,
I think he does a pretty good Dagwood in this, I mean, Dagwood, I guess the character is like, what is his like? Oh, he's kind of a doofus. He talks funny and he falls down a lot. So a perfectly good Dagwood. It is kind of like, if you're asking me like, how would I characterize Dagwood? Arthur Lake does a good job here. Now Penny's,
it's very interesting to me how they render the Dagwood hairstyle.
They kind of give him a little like, do they kind of shellac some of his hair out, but it's not,
A little bit, yeah. So it's more, so in this at least, it's his bangs that stick out. Whereas in the comics, it's he has like loose hairs popping up from between the parts in his hair.
Yeah. I guess this was easier to do, you know,
in real life.
Let's see. We've also got Penny Singleton playing Blondie. And
yes, I think she's pretty good, actually.
She is. I thought she actually Blondie is, I feel like, a more difficult role to play. Because, you know, Dagwood just has to be a doofus. But Blondie, she's got to be
this kind of sell you on the idea that she used to be a flapper and now she's the head of the household.
Yes. And she's also kind of got to be like a nagging wife, but you have to like her, you know, like you have to not see her as a nag. But of course, you know, Dagwood has to fuck up and Blondie has to tell him what to do. So she has to kind of thread that needle where she comes across as, you know, not an old battle axe, but basically playing that role, but still being hot doing it. And Penny Singleton, I think, does a very good job here.
It helps that she has she's not like Yardley Smith or anything, but she has kind of a baby voice.
She does.
And of course it serves her well because 20 years later, she was the first voice of Jane Jetson.
That's right. I didn't recognize her until I looked her up. But then as soon as I saw that, I was like, I can hear it.
Yep.
That's Jane. You know, for this movie is kind of funny because even though it's like a bit of nothing, there are so many actors in it that like you're kind of like, I know that person, you know? And, you know, there's the maid who shows up late in this film. I think the actress is Mary Wicks.
Yes.
And as soon as I saw her, I was like, I have seen her in like so much stuff. And then I realized when I looked her up, I was like, actually, I haven't. But she's such a type that I've seen that type.
My first thought was, is that Margaret Hamilton?
Yeah, exactly.
She's kind of a Margaret Hamilton type without actually being Margaret Hamilton.
Exactly. Now, the only other movie I've actually seen her in is she was in Sister Act. She played Sister Mary Lazarus. So that's where I actually recognize her from. And according to a Wikipedia page, she tended to play a lot of nuns because I guess she's got that nun manner. So, you know, it was a part she was born to play. but, I mean, I think we all know who the big star in this movie is.
That's right. Hans Conried!
Yeah, when I saw his name in the credits, I was just like, what?
Oh boy! Oh boy!
And so, of course, we all know Hans Conried, thank you, as the voice of Captain Hook in Disney's Peter Pan, the Grinch in Grinch Night is Halloween, or Halloween is Grinch Night.
Yes.
And, you know.
And King Azaz in The Mathemagician in The Phantom Tollbooth.
That's right. So he's had a long...
Which is probably why YouTube is advertising the Phantom Tollbooth on the strip next to it.
Oh, that's funny. So he has had a long and illustrious career on stage and screen and behind the scenes of animation. And apparently this was his first major role. So, so I think that's probably the most noteworthy thing about Blondie's Blessed Advent is that it launched the career of Hans Conried.
This was... Hans Conried's equivalent of Clint Eastwood appearing as a scientist forgetting where he put his rat in Revenge of the Creature.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Because it is like, yeah, as soon as you see his name in the credits, you're like, I was like, wow, I can't believe they got such a major star to be in this turkey. But, you know, we all got to start somewhere. And, of course, he was not a major star at the time. Let's see. I think... J.C. Dithers is played by Jonathan Hale, and he's another working actor. He's been in lots of stuff, and one of those things that, like...
Lots and lots of Blondie movies, obviously.
Yes. But... and I'm trying to think, like, you would probably see him as... Yeah, he was one of those guys who appeared in pretty much every show of the the 40s through 60s. So you'd see him in the Lone Ranger. You'd see him on Superman, all sorts of stuff. He's one of those, hey, it's that guy, guys. And
and apparently he committed suicide at age 74.
Jeez, huh? well, that's a real bummer. Bringing me down. That sucks. Wow. Apparently his grave went unmarked for more than four decades.
God, what was wrong? Why did they not want anyone to know who Jonathan Hale was?
Wow, yeah.
What have we forgotten about him? Shit.
A proper headstone was erected by donations from the dearly departed fan base group in 2013. I guess he was in, was that a show he was in, Dearly Departed? He's now honored with the description, "We remembered you," which, okay.
We finally remembered you.
Yeah, wow. Darkness here with the Blondie, but
yeah, geez. Yeah, I mean, it's no, it's no why did the creator of Plastic Man kill himself? But it's up there.
Yeah. Why did the creator of Plastic Man kill himself?
Nobody knows. That is one of the great mysteries of comics.
Jeez.
He seemed to be, at the top of his game. He had his own comic strip and anything. It got a movie. We should look at that sometime. But then he shot himself in his car and we never found out why.
Jeez. Wow. Well, we're going to be diving into the dark legends of Hollywood when we look at our Plastic Man movie. But meantime, J.C. Dithers, Jonathan Hale, I think he does a fairly good J.C. Dithers, but doesn't really look the part, but
No, I was going to say he's too tall and too skinny. He doesn't have that, tin pot tyrant look that Mr. Dithers does. Mr. Dithers should basically look like a walking percolator, and he doesn't.
Yeah. I guess, it'd be hard. Mr. Dithers is definitely a comic strip character, so I guess it would be hard to get someone who looked the part. But, acting wise, I think this is not a hard part to play. You're just kind of bluster a lot, but I think he does it fine. That is the thing about this movie is the acting is all, pretty good. Like I think everyone is doing their best. The movie itself is not offensive in any way. I didn't hate it watching it.
No, I laughed a couple of times, but it's a comedy. You should laugh more than a couple of times.
Yes, it is just, it is extremely slight. It is a, it is a trifle that is designed to be forgotten by the time the next Blondie movie gets into theaters. So,
month.
Yeah. It's kind of funny to think of people going to a theater to watch this movie because it really does just feel like an extended episode of a sitcom. But
maybe they made a sitcom and they couldn't get it on the air, so they sent it to the theaters in the form of two-parter episodes.
I will say this: as forgettable and meh as this movie might be, I do feel like it's head and shoulders above the Snuffy Smith movies that we watched. Because
you think so? Yeah, I mean Snuffy Smith. There was those were a lot less realistic. There was stuff about turning invisible and shit.
Yeah.
But, and of course there were the, they went a lot further with the makeup and stuff with these ones. They didn't really give Dagwood his hair or anything. And, forget about shelling out for a real Rohan your belly for Blondie.
Yeah. I think really what it is, I think it's probably just that the actors were good in this because it's not like there's anything really interesting going on, but Dagwood and Blondie were likable enough that it's like, hey, I like spending some time and watching their lives, Whereas with Snuffy Smith, I'm like, okay, God, this annoying hillbilly won't shut up. I did not
go back to your hill, William.
Yeah. Like I felt like that was just Snuffy Smith kind of being annoying in the army or whatever he was doing. Whereas in this one, there's a lot more.
That'd be a great title.
Snuffy Smith.
Snuffy Smith being annoying in the army.
I mean, it was the 40s, so that is what like everyone is doing in those days. It's interesting because I don't think Dagwood never joined the military, did he? That's one unusual thing. We never got Dagwood in the army.
I'm disappointed because it looks at the climax of this movie, it looks like Mr. Dithers gets drafted. But no. No, that's not what happens. I was disappointed.
Too bad. They were setting it up, but yeah, they whiffed it. So let's see. The basic plot is we're gonna Blondie's having a baby.
Yep.
And
Blondie's having a baby, and that's like the first 15 minutes of it. The rest of it is about getting an unwelcome guest out of their house.
Yes. Another very typical kind of sitcom plot. You know, this happens a lot in sitcoms, and I don't think it's ever happened in real life. Well, maybe it does, but it's just that thing where, you know, you've seen this happen probably in Cheers and Empty Nest and name any sitcom, they have this episode. You know, the one where the neighbor, you know, the annoying neighbor that they all hate, but like the audience will cheer whenever they show up. You know, like you know that kind of character, the Kramer.
Yeah, I know exactly why you said Empty Nest, because of course, David Leisure.
That's it.
The ultimate annoying neighbor.
That's him. Yes. Charlie, what is his name? Okay. Usually the way it goes is like the annoying neighbor will like, I don't know, like accidentally fall down, like the husband, the dad will like leave a ladder out or something, and the annoying neighbor comes and trips over it and is like, oh no, I hurt myself, and they feel so bad they kind of decide to like put him up, you know, and then he's just in the house with a broken leg being really obnoxious and demanding and driving the house crazy. But in the end, it turns out he was actually faking the injury the whole time. So then they could kick out. That's the usual way this goes. You've seen this plot like 100 times if you watch sitcoms, which I don't know if anyone does these days, but
I don't know. My dad just started watching Big Bang Theory.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Well, better that than more Bill Maher, I guess.
That is true. You know, Big Bang Theory is a very dad sitcom, because boy, does my dad loves it.
Sure is.
My dad loves it. There was an episode.
You know, there was an episode. Oh, there's an episode where they sing the cat song.
Oh, no. Is that did your dad like the cat song?
Yeah, he was singing it to our cat at the dinner table.
There's an episode where, for whatever reason, a Mr. Spock action figure, like in a vision, gives advice to the main character. And he says, where I'm from, we do something or other. And the guy's like, Vulcan? He's like, no, I'm from Mattel. My dad thinks that is the funniest thing in the entire world. He loves that bit. Anyway, but yeah, Big Bang Theory.
Wasn't that joke used in Toy Story in the first one?
Yes, I think it was. I don't think my dad saw Toy Story, though. So, but, you know, it's a dad sitcom, so dads love it. It's both of our dads, so that's 2 out of 2 dads love the Big Bang Theory.
One, the funniest line in any Toy Story movie is, he ain't the sharpest knife in the place where you put the knives. Two, you can tell that we're in. Oh, go on.
I was gonna say, I think the funniest joke is when the shark is like, "I'm a cowboy, howdy, howdy, howdy,"
because that was clearly a Far Side reference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, of course, Disney, if they're gonna have a funny joke, they're gonna steal it from the Far Side. But anyway, sorry, you're saying.
Oh, yes. I was going to say, you know that we live in the dark timeline because The Big Bang Theory got 10 seasons and a spinoff, and we only got one pilot for Welcome to Eltingville, and people have only just discovered it now.
Well, it's if you didn't already figure out we're in the dark timeline, there's your evidence right
valid.
There. What are you going to do? Well,
yes, this is the timeline where Biff got the sports almanac and became a superstar.
I mean, it kind of is, if you think about it.
It really is, yeah. But, I mean, they actually based him on Trump.
Yeah. Well, at the very least, we got 25 Blondie movies. So,
yes. So that means that we are covered for the next, you know, however many years we do this podcast.
Yeah. But,
you know, I'm afraid if you are.
Well,
knuckle down.
Well, yeah. And these movies are from the 40s, which means that they are filmed in 1940s fashion. So that really makes the comedy suffer. Because
you think so?
Oh,
the,
yeah.
The cinematography?
Yes.
Interesting.
Well, here's the thing is let me your typical 1940s joke in a movie goes like this. One character says the setup, right? The second character delivers the punchline. The first character says, "What do you mean by that?" The second character then explains the joke, and then they stand around awkwardly in silence as the scene very, very slowly fades out. So
yeah, and then they'll do a little what are you meant by that kind of thing, like
yeah,
like they're just starting to get it themselves. Yeah, you're right. That is a thing.
It's weird because watching it, it's like, did they not know how jokes worked in the 1940s? Part of it is just like, I think, like, you know, they hadn't quite figured out the idea of how to. That a quick cut would be better there. So every scene does fade out, and that means actors are just kind of like waiting for the fade, which is very odd sometimes, because especially because, you know, like, we don't...
Please fade out. Come on.
Yeah. And it's especially weird because, like, you know, nowadays you would expect like kind of a soundtrack or a score, and a lot of these things are just happening. There's dead silence.
Yeah.
So, you know, the soundtrack, there is a soundtrack, but it's,
you could really benefit from a, you could benefit from something like, you know, Fred Flintstone's like,
yes. That's, yeah, they just, you know, it was a different world. They hadn't quite got the formula down. So, that's kind of that kind of makes even some of the better jokes in this movie do kind of suffer because of that, I think. And you know, there actually are some good ones. There's some sequences that kind of got me to giggle. The bit where Dagwood is trying to explain the birds and the bees to Little Dumpling, but his obnoxious friend keeps interrupting. Like, that was pretty good, but you know, they, again, then they had to be like, oh, now we're going to fade out. Okay, we're just going to sit here as you do. Anyway, Little Dumpling, he's trying to catch the stork as the movie opens. And because he's been informed that the stork brings babies because they're going to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's correct. Yes.
That
they're going to buy a baby.
They're going to have a baby, but it's not Xanth, so there ain't no stork. Instead, he's just... instead, I think he does capture Dagwood at one point by accident.
Yes.
But, you know, we move on from that pretty quickly. The important thing is that Dagwood is driving everyone insane because he's nervous about the new baby.
He's really enthusiastic about being a new dad. Yes, he's rereading this parenting pamphlet, and I guess he's made up his mind to be a more active father than he was with Baby Dumpling. I guess, because it's like, you know, being, you know, parenthood for the second time, and he's acting like it's the first. And so maybe Baby Dumpling isn't his. Maybe he's the mailman's.
Well, no wonder he's always like, you know, clobbering that mailman.
No, he ran into the mailman so hard they exchanged some sperm.
Does the mailman have a name? Because in the comic, he's like Mr. Beasley or something, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he has a different name in this, though. I forget.
But, yeah, he doesn't have the mustache, so he just doesn't really read as the same mailman to me without the mustache. But Mr. Dithers is like getting sick of Dagwood, and so is Blondie. So they conspire to get Dagwood sent to a convention in... Detroit, I think it is. Or is it Chicago?
It's Chicago.
Thank you. So Dagwood's going to Chicago. And he's going to an art.
This is Chicago pizza, best in the world.
Best in the world. God, Chicago pizza, garbage. Garbage.
I didn't get to have any when I went.
Yeah, you didn't miss anything. Because let me tell you, Ethan, when you eat a pizza, would you like your pizza to be more like a stew? like
maybe
in a cauldron of crust, but instead of pizza, you get a tomato stew. So that's Chicago.
Is it
pizza.
Solid when it's cold?
I mean, it would be more like a quiche, I guess, when it gets cold.
That sounds good. Shit.
Well, you know, maybe then you did miss it because
pizza quiche.
Neat. I am not a fan of Chicago style pizza, nor am I a fan of Chicago style hot dogs. What the hell?
The red hots?
Yeah. They're red hots, and you put, what, banana peppers on them? My God. Hmm. The people of Chicago, they don't know what's what. But when I was there, I did have a kind of, I got Kookaroo, not Kookaroo, that's Southern California. What is that chicken restaurant that they have
in Chicago? Do they even exist anymore?
Probably not. Kookaroo?
I saw it once and never again.
Yeah. No, it's a South African chicken restaurant that they have in Chicago. It's, you know, I think it's a chain. I don't know the name of it. Oh, Nando's. Chicky Nando's. You know it because it sounds like a joke name that they made for an English chav would say. But no, apparently it's a real restaurant.
I was going to say it sounded vaguely racist, but
well, it is South African, so. But you know, it was a
little bit
good.
Of racism in every bite.
Yeah, it was like you could eat like you own a diamond mine. Chicky Nando's.
Eat like you own Twitter.
Yes. Eat the Twitter bird. But anyway, that's all I remember about Chicago. Didn't you go to Chicago recently?
Yeah, and we didn't get to have any pizza.
That's right. But you did get to see that famous Chicago Heat.
Yes, the famous Chicago Heat that it wasn't that famous. I felt like I should have known about it.
Yeah.
But no, we happened to go for a 2-mile hike on the hottest day of the year, and I felt very close to calling the hospital, but I got better.
That's good. Well, I'm glad you didn't have to
call. I feel like I lost 15 pounds in a sweating that day.
Well, you know, that you left your heart in Chicago, as they say. Wait, that's not Chicago, is it?
Yeah, I almost did. Jesus.
I'm glad you're still with us. So you can.
Yes.
Because I know when you were in Chicago, I can't die. Must live to review Blondie movie.
Yeah, I mean it would be very embarrassing if you had to replace me for that reason. But.
That's true. Well, I'm glad. Honestly, Ethan, I would not be doing this podcast with anyone else. I would have to do I would have to do a very sad announcement to be like, everyone, a special presentation that Ralph will not be seen tonight is over. Because, like, literally, I'm sorry. Like, we lost the heart and soul of the podcast today, you know?
Aw.
But
I thought you were the heart and soul.
I like to think of myself as the muscle. Of the podcast. Maybe the wild card. But in any case, you're still with us.
Yeah, I'm the Ray and Egon of this group, and you are the Peter and Winston.
There you actually that scans. That does scan. Well, luckily you're still here, so we can discuss Blondie's big adventure.
Blondie, yes.
So the important thing is Dagwood goes to Chicago, and that's where he meets the man that we were telling you about, Hans Conrad,
yes, in the role of George Wickley, a aspiring. Actually, I don't know if he's aspiring or not. Maybe he sold a play by now. Anyway, he's a playwright and actor, and he basically he's out of money because I guess he hasn't sold a play in a while. He's living in a hotel in New York. So he basically ingratiates himself to Dagwood in order to eat the food that he orders to his room.
Yeah.
And along the way, he writes a speech for Dagwood to give in Mr. Dither's place, which is basically telling an entire room of architects that America doesn't need architects anymore. People can design their own homes. They can make them out of banana peels and paint chips.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, when we actually get to hear bits of the speech, it's like, that's very, it's okay. That was an odd choice, but, presumably, I guess what they're saying, George Wickley doesn't know anything about architecture because he's not an architect. This seems to be a thing though, that like a creative minds did back in the day where you just lived in hotels. You know?
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to think of like...
Was it cheaper than renting an apartment?
Yeah, like I feel like that's a story you hear a lot about like people in the golden age of Hollywood who had like kind of in their twilight years, they just lived in like a hotel and eventually like they weren't even paying, but like the hotel just felt bad and let them live there. I feel like that's happened quite a few times. But I can't think of an example other than Robert Crumb's brother, and I don't think that's really
no. Yeah, that's not really a Hollywood thing. And this is also not a Hollywood thing, but for the last 10, maybe 15 years of her life, Rosa Parks was living in an apartment that was paid for by the CEO of Little Caesars.
Well, at least he did one good thing.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. George Wickley... he is kind of, he's a thespian, you kind of know what kind of character. I mean, I think we all know what kind of character. He's Hans Conried.
If you imagine him doing that thing with your hands that you do when you're an actor, where you sort of, you know, pass it through as if you're wiping an invisible window. Yeah, that kind of character.
Yeah. He's always what you call milking the cow and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you said, he's out of money. Dagwood shows up, and what I thought was going to happen, because they're both pacing on the hallways reciting their speeches, because, you know, George is writing a play, and Dagwood's... I thought they were going to crash into each other, get their notes mixed up, and we would have a zany misunderstanding, but instead...
I thought that too, yes.
Yeah, that's a classic, right? But instead... Dagwood is ordering all the accoutrements to make a Dagwood sandwich in his room. And so George is all like, oh, let me write that speech for you and I'll, so I can eat your food. And, it's very funny how like, you know, in a PG rated universe, or maybe even a G rated universe, actually, this is pretty G rated.
This is not pre-code.
Yeah. But when you look in these G-rated universes, dudes are just, they just love eating sandwiches, you know?
Yeah.
It's the one vice allowed.
Sandwiches. Yeah. It was the pizza of 1940.
Yeah. It's just funny because it's like the way they act about sandwiches, you'd expect this was a much darker vice, but they're all like, sandwiches, you say. So he comes over and he writes a speech for Dagwood. And it is funny because I like that they immediately cut to like a newspaper that's saying architect stunned into silence. Convention ends early.
Yeah, they didn't even film the scene. They just cut directly to the reaction. And I thought that worked. I thought that was pretty funny.
That was actually
timing the way it works in a comic strip. So that felt like, you know, they actually captured a little bit of the same energy there.
Yeah, exactly. That's the
big
thing.
Big pink raisin discovered in tub. Boy's whereabouts unknown.
I mean, if they had more of that, this movie would have been a lot more, you know, a lot funnier at least. So that's one of the best. I think that's one of the best bits in the whole movie. But then also, it's kind of funny that like we realize that 1942 is very different than 2023 because. It takes Mr. Dithers a few weeks before he finds out about this incident, you know?
Yeah, he didn't even know. And, you know, Dagwood didn't even know, apparently.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, nowadays you would, because you expect, like, yeah, you would instantly know if something bad happened. It would be all over the internet. They would be dragging you on Architect Twitter if this happened. But, you know, back then, it's like, I actually...
Oh, no, assumed, not Arc Twitter.
I mean, I thought, you know, on Weird Architect Twitter, you know, Mr. Jithers is a pretty big wheel on Weird Architect Twitter, you know?
Yeah, that's just the dirtbag architect.
They're all, you know, yeah, well, you know how it is. The dirtbag architects are always like, they're always like getting canceled by the, you know, the shitlib architects. It's always high drama.
Yeah, they're just terminally on high steel, you know?
Yeah. It's like they're all the rosebud emoji architects are beefing with the globe emoji architects. It's a mess there. But I expected they were probably going to telegraph or something to Mr. Jithers to tell him what happened. But no, he finds out in a newspaper article a few weeks later. In the interim, Dagwood returns home and Blondie has the baby. And then they very slowly return home because
Blondie has the baby, or I guess maybe her surrogate had the baby off screen, because, you know, they made it very, you know, there's a scene where Dagwood gets a call from his son and says, yeah, my mom's downstairs busy with the babies, all five of them. And Dagwood shrieks, it's quintuplets, and runs home, only to find that both, I guess, Blondie and Daisy were pregnant at the same time, and now there's a litter of puppies. And the question is, if the little boy saw the puppies being born, how is he still in the dark about where his baby sister is coming from?
Well, little dumpling, he's not the brightest bulb. Honestly, when Dagwood is explaining the birds and the bees, Little Dumpling is not getting it, but his friend Alvin seems to be pretty quick on the uptake, I think.
Alvin pretty much knew everything all along. He was like, you know, quit spinning your wheels, get to the point.
Also, I feel like if I was Dagwood and my wife Blondie was pregnant, right? And they said it's quintuplets, I'd be like, you could not fit a single baby in that complete lack of baby bump. How do you fit five in there? Do you have a hollow leg? You just storing all the baby? What's going on here? How's that even? But
I think it was a secret that pregnancy changed you at all at that point.
Do you think like women were like when they actually got pregnant, like, what the fuck? What is this?
There used to be maternity girdles. They used to, like, you know, squash the baby into you. That has to be incredibly painful.
That also sounds like a bad idea for the baby.
Yeah, it's not good for you. It's not good for the baby. It's a good thing we stopped doing it.
Of course.
Let's go on a little tangent here. I have a book here from 1947.
Uh-huh.
It is called The Doctor Has a Baby.
Let's hear.
On the inside cover, it says, of course the doctor didn't really have the baby. His wife did. Can you imagine a doctor capable of giving birth?
That is crazy. That is just, that is so crazy. That's like saying that a doctor giving birth would be like a woman driving a car.
Yeah, the world would end.
Man, so the doctor's wife has a baby. So the doctor's not delivering a baby. It's just about a dad who's a doctor. Okay.
Yes.
So
the first chapter includes this passage. Before my pregnancy, I had been practicing law and had always tried to appear well-groomed and neat. John always said he loved the way I looked, and I intended to stay that way. For my money, however, there is nothing in the whole world more peculiar-looking than a pregnant woman. Except for the new automobiles, she is the only thing I know of that can appear to be going and coming at the same time. In the final stages, she walks with feet...
Okay, sorry, go on.
What? In the final stages, she walks with feet set well apart and body leaning backward at a sharp angle in the manner of a juggler towing off for his act, balancing carefully like a tightrope walker on stilts without a safety net. When she is at rest, she extends a few feet ahead of her chair. In motion, she waddles along like a penguin, making the common duck look graceful by comparison. I was no different. Despite the assurances of many of our caramel fiction writers, who wax poetic about the glowing spiritual look that comes over the face of a pregnant woman. I myself have never seen it. My own face looked flatter than last Thursday's souffle and more agonized than rigor mortis on the fifth day. Despite two Lane Bryant's dirndl skirts, large detracting flower on the shoulder, and 20 other amateur devices for concealment, I showed. In fact, experience has proved the sad but inescapable fact that there is no effective camouflage for maternity. Of course, my dearest friends lied most blatantly, assuring me that I was unrecognizably pregnant and sweetly slipping me the old I'd never have guessed routine. So this is a world where you were supposed to hide it, even when you were in public.
Huh.
And, you know, being recognized as being pregnant was some sort of something you just kind of looked the other way from.
Well, I mean, it implies that, you know, you've done it.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah,
like,
I've met people like that. People who are like, you know, I'll talk to a friend, and another friend of ours who's pregnant will stop by, and, you know, and then when she leaves, the other one's like, you had sex.
It's like, did you hear? It's pretty scandalous. Blondie had sex with her husband.
Oh my god. Oh my god, pregnant at age 35. What will the neighbors say?
It's like, it's just shocking. Just shocking. Probably even more shocking, though, is that apparently this book was written by a lady lawyer in 1947, yep. Which I would not have expected, but good for her. You know?
Well, not anymore, it says. Motherhood has put an end to her appearances before the bar. That reassures us on the back cover, I guess. Oh, good, good. Oh,
good, good.
I'd hate to think that she had a life outside the family.
Well, you know, life was hard for pregnant women in those days. Interesting story. Maybe I've told you this, but my mother, when she was pregnant with me, she was in the army. And they did not have a maternity uniform in those days. So she had to actually go. And I believe she wasn't the only one. I believe there were several women who were part of this push. I don't know exactly what she did, but apparently it was because of her complaining that they actually instituted a maternity uniform. This was in 1979, so I guess there were not a lot of women in the army, first of all, and fewer, I guess, were pregnant at the time. So, anyway, you're welcome, America. It's because of me that there is a maternity uniform in the United States military.
Yes, and so next time we go to war, you can look forward to the all-pregnant second trimester platoon paratrooping over Korea and taking and cutting about 50 throats for America.
We salute you. I mean, that's...
We salute you, and we'll keep our hands to ourselves. We know you hate that.
Yeah. Honestly, actually, the idea of, like, you know, a pregnant army platoon cutting throats, I kind of... That is actually...
Kind of hot.
Kind of hot, yeah. I'm like, you know what? I kind of dig in this. But anyway, the important thing is that at least there's no pregnant lawyers. And no lady lawyers either. Although, it was definitely a different time. I mean, I know pregnancy is hard on a woman, a pregnant person.
It's hard on a man too.
It is.
Let's not forget.
Yes.
We have some, you know, we know some assigned female at birth men who are in fact giving birth themselves, and we salute you too.
That's right.
Way to go.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we'll say pregnancy can be hard on the body, and on the self-esteem sometimes. But it doesn't sound like the 1940s way of dealing with it really helped either of those things. You feel bad, and
you're almost in denial about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess in some ways, it's good that we're living in a world where people are, I guess, more open about being pregnant. You're allowed to be pregnant.
Yeah, now, you're allowed to be now. Yeah, and unless you're a minority, then you have to be kept away at all costs.
Oh yeah, and in fact, actually, here since we live in America, it's like not only are you allowed to be pregnant, you can't not be pregnant anymore.
Yeah,
thanks, Mitch McConnell.
Get ready for pregnancy test stops at the border of your state.
Well,
it's coming.
Right now the chipmunk is all like, ah, finally, my world. It's like he's I'm living in the good timeline. Obscure joke. Ask your parents.
Ask your parents or check the podcastigation archives.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's a deep cut. But anyway, we were speaking of, so what happens is Blondie has the baby and boy, does she look good with that baby out of her. She looks like when, Barbie had the baby and you just unscrew the pregnant belly and screw on the flat belly. Yes. Except you even have to do that.
So she clearly no longer looks like she's both coming and going at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that makes sense because if you are very pregnant and you're kind of walking in a, you know, kind of a, I hesitate to say a waddle, but a waddle. You know,
it's a good word.
You know, if you're,
it's a respectable word.
Yes. You know, if you're moving kind of side to side, I guess maybe that's the thing is like, oh, okay, it's hard to tell coming or going. I think that's what they're trying to get at right there.
If somebody doesn't like being described as waddling, you can also try lumbering.
There you go. I mean,
or looming.
These are all ominous. Very good words in my opinion. People dealing with pregnancy their mileage may vary on that, but anyway, so Blondie returns home, but guess who's there? It's George. George Whitley has, cause Dagwood said, you gotta come and visit my family in whatever city we live in. I don't actually know where they live.
Yes. They live in Missouri. I remember that much.
Really?
Yeah. I wouldn't think Missouri either, but there's a bunch of stuff about Blondie that makes it clear that that's where they live.
It explains a lot about Dagwood, I guess, but except that they don't have any accents. But all right, so George has come to visit them in Missouri, and he's doing the thing now where he won't leave. He's basically kind of an annoying house guest, you know, who.
Yeah.
Ingratiates himself in the family. But,
you know, they could push this a little further. He could be like, you know, unfortunately, did you notice that Blondie and Dagwood sleep in separate beds?
Very 1942.
Yes. You know, unfortunately, they don't share a bed or else you could have George sleeping between them.
Which would be pretty funny. Yeah.
Yeah, it would. And unfortunately, nobody smokes, or you could have Blondie complaining she could never find her cigarettes, and George has little bits of tobacco on his lips. And
oh, yeah. Well, a woman doesn't smoke. But they do have a humidor in the house, so apparently George is smoking lots of cigars, though I don't think we get to see him do it. Actually, the thing about this that is funny, I thought, is it kind of works, I guess. It also kind of doesn't. Because Hans Conried is just so charming, you know?
Yeah, he's great. He's actually better than either of them.
Like, it's one of those, like, I know he's kind of a freeloader, but he's so light. You know, it's like, I mean, I don't know if when you have, like, a friend group and there'll be a friend maybe who's kind of a freeloader, but, like, they're fun to have around, and you just kind of assume, like, that's their payment for being here. Like, oh, they're always a little short of cash, but we pay for them because they bring the fun. That's kind of what, like, Hans Conried is doing here, you know?
I feel like I'm being hinted at something. Do I owe you some money?
No, not you. You're not fun, Ethan. No, I'm kidding. No, you are, but, I was thinking of someone back in high school, actually.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, that's back when we actually had friend groups, you know? Nowadays, we don't really do that anymore because we're also atomized. But but George is like, he's a lot of fun. He's just like, and also he's not like he's actually kind of useful around the house because he can soothe the baby and, you know, he's... he also like hires a maid for them. So,
yeah.
Which
I guess is, you know, being paid on spec because he's offering her a role in his play and, you know, he says he'll pay her when the play gets sold.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was an option, man.
I mean, I guess people...
I could be paying for things with stuff that I haven't written yet.
I mean, I guess, like, that's a thing. Is like, if people want to be on Broadway enough, they'll work for exposure. So that's kind of what's happening there. And that's the thing is, like, Blondie kind of gets, you know, irritated because it's her house and she wants to be in charge of her own house, which is fair, but... I do like the fact that, like, they established that George is like, no, I'm paying for this. I'm doing this to, like, help you out. So, like, you know, he's not presented as, like, just an obnoxious freeloader. You know, he's trying to help out.
Blondie hates him, but I think that's more because Blondie is, you know, having a hard time bonding with her new baby. She's still postpartum, but, you know, it's 3 weeks in, but yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, watching this was like, it's difficult because, you know, obviously it's like Blondie is like, oh, get rid of him because I just had a baby and I don't want him here, you know, but which is understandable. But at the same time, Dagwood is in such a bind because, like, this guy shows up, right? And it's like, and literally Blondie is like, tell him to eat rocks. You know, get him out of here. He can't. He's like, and Dagwood's like, oh, can't he stay for dinner? No, get him out of here now. And it's like, Blondie, I'm sorry, you are being unreasonable here. I know that you're just had a baby and you want him to go, but there's the laws of hospitality. You at least have to, like, have him for dinner. Come on, that's just the way it is. You know, and you're putting Dagwood in this extremely awkward position. Women always do this, because they're always like, go tell so-and-so to get out of here. Well, why don't you tell him, huh? Oh, you're not such a big woman now, are you? If you're the one who's going to go to, you think you're big man. You're so good. You got to tell your man, tell him to go on to do stuff.
I do it myself, except that I've got 5 stitches in my perineum.
Well, you know, it's 1942, so they probably added a 6th just for Dagwood.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the husband stitch.
Yeah. I'm laughing because it's bad. It's not funny. It's not really funny.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. But, you know, it's like, but then when he stays 3 weeks, okay, yeah, now Blondie has a legitimate case. But I think she's being a little unreasonable at first. Again, I think Penny Singleton.
She was right, though. So maybe she just knows what a pushover Dagwood is, and how he's going to let this guy stay for a week or more.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dagwood he's a people pleaser. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I know how it is, but
you please us all. That's why we listen to you.
That's right. It's my melodious voice. What's his face? Dagwood, I think, implies. Dagwood is like trying to think of, because when it turns out George's been doing long distance calls, then Dagwood kind of like gets mad, but is very easily convinced to let George continue lollygagging around. But, you know, with an extra mouth to feed, it's hard to make ends meet. So George comes up with a really good solution, which is to get Dagwood a raise. And he uses his theatrical talents to badger Mr. Dithers into doing just that.
Yeah, which is something that Dagwood, of course, has always been asking for and been shouted down. So this is a major thing in the Dagwood canon, that he actually got a raise.
Yeah.
Whereas, yes. So this is sort of... It kind of reminds me, believe it or not, of a Dilbert strip, where Dogbert, decides to work at Dilbert's company, and his method is to just stand on the boss's desk and yell, "I'm a loud dog! Give me a job! You must give me a job because I'm loud!" Okay.
I mean, I guess the method works.
That was too easy. He must have gotten me. It must not be a very good job. So he gets back on the desk. Give me a better job, you imbecile! Bad trend. I shouted my way into a job with a corner office.
I mean, honestly, that's how life is these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's kind of like how, you know, getting getting published isn't so much about having a great book as it is just, you know, just butting your head against the tree until it falls down.
Yep. That's the way it be. You just got to look like Darla Dimple said, just be big and loud.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, at least she was honest.
Yeah. She was onto something, that cartoon character. But anyway, yeah. So George actually, the thing here is like, I guess George, what he does here is really nice for Dagwood. It's a really good thing. And mm-hmm. if he had presented this as like, you know what, Dagwood, you've done so much for me, I'm going to do something for you to pay you back before I take my leave, I think Blondie would have been like, oh, you know what, I take everything back, George. You're an okay guy. The problem is he does this with the intention to continue staying and freeloading. So yes. Blondie has to finally have a talk with him. And this is a pretty good talk, actually, you know?
It is, yeah.
I think I said earlier, Penny Singleton has this thing where she has to be a nag without coming across as a nag. And that's kind of what she does here. She gives a very, you know, she's very calm and collected throughout this, but she basically says to George, like, look, this is my family and I want to live with my family and I don't want you here, you know? And then George is shamed. So he's going to use his acting talents to put everything right. Sort of.
Yeah. Well, it works the first time when he uses... We haven't talked too much about the maid. The maid is under his employ, so Blondie can't get rid of her, and neither can Dagwood. So he has to pretend to be a producer who has discovered her and get her to quit the job.
Yeah.
You know, she's not going to be happy when she finds out, but hopefully he's going to be far away by that time.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, he does, cause it's weird. Cause the producer is like, I am the producer of George Wickley's play and we want you on Broadway. So it's like, it's possible that means the play is actually happening, but I don't think it actually is. I think that was just a ruse.
I'm pretty sure the producer was in fact George.
Yes, so. It was. That was George wearing a mustache and talking in a kind of a goofy Hungarian accent, I guess. But then she needs money to get to New York. To be on Broadway. So he steals the money from Little Dumpling's piggy bank and gives it to her so she can get out. And then that's when Mr. Dithers realizes that Dagwood fucked up that speech to the architects and comes in and wants to fire him. But that's when George shows up pretending to be a rival architecture firm who wants to hire Dagwood because his speech was so good. And anyway, but
now not only is Dagwood fired, but basically Mr. Dithers has been fired too. He's been blacklisted from like the architecture union or something.
Yeah. So he's really pissed, but then this scene actually, I think, works really well because Hans Conried, by pretending to be a rival architect, basically gets into a bidding war with Mr. Dithers to try and get Dagwood to go to each of their firms. And while this is going on, Blondie is right behind George, like just grinning because she is so excited about this until she gets a glimpse of the papers that he's holding, which are supposedly like the contract for Dagwood, but is actually just a copy of George's play. And as soon as she sees that, she figures out what's really going on, and you can just see her face fall, which is a great little bit, I thought. And then, of course, because then Dagwood decides, you know, instead of going to work for George, because they want him to go work for Mr. Dithers again, right?
Yes.
But instead...
At a raise. Yes. Yeah.
But instead, he decides, I'm not going to take the raise because, Mr. Dithers, you're an asshole to me, and let me tell you a thing or two. So the plan totally gets fucked up, and Blondie is like, Dagwood, you should work for Mr. Dithers! Because, of course, she knows that this other job offer isn't real. So, So the comedy in this scene works pretty good.
Dagwood is kind of a dit.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then I think it looks, but then what happened, they somehow figure out that it's actually George. I can't remember how they figure it out.
Yeah.
Then a man from Washington shows up and wants to hire Dagwood. Like, he's like a guy on the president's board of architects or something.
Yeah. And he was inspired by the weird part in Dagwood's speech about making architecture out of potato skins and stuff. He said, we want to set up a fund to study all these, and we want Dagwood to be part of it. And because, you know, once again, suddenly we are reminded that, yes, it's wartime. There have been no mentions of anything about the war until just now.
Yeah,
and
I guess life continued as usual on the home front. I actually was kind of expecting at some point this guy just turn to the camera and remind us to buy bonds. But
yeah, me too. I thought they were gonna, you know, start singing Over There.
Yeah, they're like, all right, and this turn like, and you in the audience, remember, collect scrap metal for Uncle Sam. But
don't throw that leftover bacon grease away.
When you throw away that bacon grease, you're throwing it away with Hitler. So,
the bacon greasing.
So, I actually thought what was going to happen is that George would basically reveal that he had written the speech, and he would get recruited to go to Washington. And Mr. Dithers, realizing that George was responsible for the speech, would give Dagwood his job back. But instead, the movie ends because it's 1942 and the concept of a denouement had not yet been invented. This is a thing that just happens in these old movies from like the 40s.
Out of film.
Yeah, like especially in comedies, but like you watch it, like half the time a monster movie will end with like the monster like gets shot and the guys are just like, monster, he tampered in God's domain, the end. And it's like, oh, we don't get a, you know, a little wrap up about what. Okay. That
when the monster's dead, the movie is over.
Yeah. When monkey cry, when monkey die, everybody cry, you know? But what happens is, like, everyone starts arguing and the baby starts crying. And George, who is outside at this point, because he kind of sneaks out, tells Little Dumpling, Alexander, how to soothe the baby. You secretly blow on the baby's ear and that'll calm the baby. So he goes in, he calms the baby, and everyone is shocked. Dagwood and Blondie are kind of like, what? And Mr. Dithers and the guy, the Washington guy, continue to argue, and then it's the end. So
yeah. Now, I was skipping. What I did was, when I first got the link, I skipped to the end to see the ending. And so the ending, 30 seconds, just looks like a 5-year-old boy pretending to have big boobs.
That's right. He's doing the thing where he's trying to thumb his suspenders, but he doesn't have suspenders.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you're supposed to stick your thumbs in your armpits to do that.
So he's just like, look at my titties. It's 1942. Reunier hasn't been established yet. So this is how we do it. Reunier? Well, how is it actually pronounced?
Reunier? I don't know how that's pronounced. I haven't bought any products from them. So just look at the catalog.
Yeah, you know, I'm old. Is that how it's pronounced? I've only seen it spelled. But anyway, you know, he's just doing the thing, but it's like, it doesn't quite work because he's like, you know, they didn't explain how it worked to him. Right. You know, or, you know, it's 1942. Yes. Why isn't the kid in suspenders? Everyone wore suspenders back then.
So you could be like, so you could do the Mayor Luigi thing. A fine day for mayoring, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, exactly. And now I'm just a simple country lawyer, you know. Or, you know what? In fact, I'm just a simple country architect here in Missouri. Yeah, it's perfect. Why didn't they do that? Why his name is Little Dumpling, which is probably the most Missouri name ever. Why wasn't he wearing suspenders? You know what? I think that is a real CinemaSins ding right there, Frank R. Strayer, who is and King Features Syndicate. That's Blondie's Blessed Advent. Based on the comic strip created by Chick Young, and according to the poster, Blondie has a baby, Dagwood has a fit, y'all have hysterics. Two of those things happened. Well, how about the third? What do you think of Blondie's big event?
Well, okay. Oh, Dagwood had a fit and all had hysterics, but yeah, Blondie didn't have a baby. There was clearly, you know, she was clearly hiring some Indian woman.
Yeah, this is, there is not a lot of baby having in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it really should have been, you know, not Blondie's blessed event, but Blondie's, like, I don't know, Blondie's unwelcome, Blondie's little stranger would have been a better one, because, you know, you have both, you know, the little stranger, as they used to refer to the baby at the, you know, back when a woman was expected to look at the infant that just, you know, exited her loins and be like, who are you?
Wait, is that really what they also said back then?
Yeah, you say, I'm expecting a little stranger.
That's kind of weird. And okay.
Yeah, it's kind of ominous. It's, you know, I think you could build a horror story around that.
It's like, I feel like it's actually kind of like upsetting that apparently in 1942, like that was so, like, apparently postpartum psychosis was so common that, like, it was just accepted that, like, oh, you're not going to bond with that baby, you know?
No.
It's like, is something wrong?
Well, you're certainly not going to breastfeed it. Good God.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's probably because it is 1942, so this is probably linked to the fact that doctors are like, okay, well, you know, for your pregnancy, I recommend 3 scotches instead of 4 a day, you know? Because it's, it's fucking 1942.
And, you know, we don't recommend a weight gain of more than 5 pounds, so we'll put you on Metrical for this whole pregnancy.
Yeah. It's like, be sure that you put on that girdle.
What a world. What a world to be a woman in.
Yeah.
What a nightmare.
Man. Well, I'm glad we live in 2023 where being a woman is definitely way better, you know?
Yes.
And we'll only
and pregnancy isn't just much more acceptable. Now it's required.
Yeah. Don't worry. Things will only continue to get better and better for women in this country. You're all going to get to wear little handmaiden outfits. It's going to be great. It's going to be amazing. Cool. Good on America. Great job, America. Great fucking job. Okay. Anyway, yeah. Blondie's big event. It was a movie? It existed?
It was a movie.
It was a movie.
Oh, boy. How soon do you want to do another Blondie movie, though?
Well, you know what? I could watch another Blondie movie, you know? It's just because...
Yeah. Well, I wonder if there's an order that you should, you know, a recommended... You know, by the, you know, the oldest cinema nerds left is like, okay, I'm going to make a tier list of Blondie movies. Okay. Blondie's Blessed Event, shit tier. Blondie's Lucky Day, S tier.
Well, let's see. We did not start at the beginning of the Blondie series because.
No.
And perhaps we should. We've got Blondie, 1938, then Blondie Meets the Boss. Blondie Takes a Vacation, Blondie Brings Up Baby, Blondie on a Budget, Blondie Has Servant Trouble, Blondie Plays Cupid, Blondie Goes Latin, spicy, Blondie in Society with the shunting, Blondie Goes to College, Blondie Goes to College in 1942, oh my god, now that's crazy, Blondie's Blessed Advent, the same year, Blondie for Victory, also the same year, so 3 Blondie movies in 1 year, It's a Great Life, Footlight Glamour, Leave It to Blondie, Life with Blondie, Blondie's Lucky Day, Blondie Knows Best, Blondie's Big Moment, Blondie's Holiday, Blondie in the Dough, Blondie's Anniversary, Blondie's Award.
Well, that's the one where they try to roll Blondie up and bake her.
It's the sexy Gumby crossover.
Yes.
There's Blondie's Reward, Blondie's Secret, Blondie's Big Deal, Blondie Hits a Jackpot, Blondie's Hero, and Beware of Blondie is the last one in the series.
Well, that's the one where she becomes a werewolf or something, right?
Beware of Blondie. She leaps and creeps. And
yeah, you should beware of Blondie because she's got a heart of glass.
Oh, yeah. She in Beware of Blondie, that's when the man from Mars comes down and eats all the guitars. anyway, so yeah, we got a lot of Blondie movies to go through. The final one is in 1950, so...
yeah, 28 movies in 12 years. They made 4 Blondie movies in 1947.
Wow. Presumably, like I said, people must have been, well, you know what? In the war, things are probably pretty depressing, you know? People want escapism, and that is a true. Like, in bad times, people want light, frothy escapism, and, I mean, hey, look at our media right now, you know?
Yeah.
So it makes sense that people were probably, like, you know, super depressed about, like, you know, oh, my son just got, like, you know, killed in Iwo Jima or something. I think I'm going to see a Blondie movie to take my, you know, take my mind off when the, you know, Uncle Sam delivers his corpse.
Yeah.
So
I'll come home just in time to tape up the black star in the window.
Yeah. So, you know, and then you're like at the funeral where you're burying the remains, and the vicar's like, "Hey, so how was that Blondie movie?"
Oh, it was so funny. Dagwood ran into the mailman and
you say he ran into the mailman. I got to see that. I got to catch this.
You know, other funeral guests come running over while you're weeping and throwing yourself over the box. Like, somebody say Blondie? Oh, I love Blondie.
It's like, everyone's like, is there Blondie? Is there a Blondie movie going on right now? We should all go see that. It's like the Garuga Mets commercial. Everyone's like, we're going to go see Blondie now. It's like, well, what happened in this movie? Okay, well, listen, in this movie, Blondie had a baby, a second baby. You know, it's not like Blondie brings up the baby, because in this one, it's baby dumpling. It's been 3 years since Baby Dumpling was born, and now he's, what, 10 years old. So,
let's see. Blondie brings up Baby in 1939, and yeah, Blondie's supposed to invent. Yeah, he aged a little bit. I guess it's not the same Baby Dumpling.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess they were like, look, we gotta. So by 1950, do you think they had teenager Cookie and Alexander by that point, or are you still dealing with the babies?
I don't know. Oh, it looks like Baby Dumpling had already been born in the first movie.
Oh, it looks like, according to Wikipedia, by 1950, Larry Sims is still playing Baby, still credited as Baby Dumpling. So I guess,
even though he was calling himself Alexander.
Yeah.
So
I guess it's still Baby Dumpling. But they got Marjorie Ann Muchie as Cookie.
Marjorie Ann Munchie?
Yeah. It is very weird knowing Blondie now and being like, oh, you know that sexy daughter Dagwood has? Here she is as a baby. Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'll say that this Blondie movie, I it's entertaining enough. You know, like if I was in 1942 and I went to see this, I'd probably be entertained by it. It's, you know, it hasn't aged particularly well. I mean, not because of anything wrong with what they did, just the style of filmmaking is very different now. And, you know, this is like watching that movie where Paul Reiser and the Baldwins go to McDonald's. You know, as soon as it's over, you're like, I will never think of this ever again. Though I might if I went to the Rotary Club.
Bye bye love.
Yeah. If I went to like the Rotary Club and you know, what's his face, Arthur Lake was posing with a sandwich, I mean, I'd still be pretty excited about that. That'd be pretty
yeah,
great.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Anyway, you
know, but yeah, nothing really lasting came out of the Blondie series except for more Blondie series. Whereas the movie Bye Bye Love was one of the first places everyone got a good look at Janine Garofalo. So,
really? Well,
yeah.
And we all decided we want more of her.
Yeah. I mean, where do you think Air America Radio would be if not for her?
I mean, I do like Janine Garofalo. I love, although I often get her mixed up with Gina Davis. Love Gina.
Well, I mean, you know, they're both. Okay, Janine Garofalo. Okay, what roles would you switch Janine Garofalo for Gina Davis and vice versa?
Well, if I'm remembering correctly, it would be funny to see Gina Davis as the bowler in Mystery Men.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
And I wouldn't mind seeing Janine Garofalo as the vampire lady in Saturday the 14th.
Oh, that was her? Okay.
I think, or am I thinking
I would want to see
Transylvania 29610 or...
Oh, Transylvania 65000. Yeah.
Is that the one I'm thinking of? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
that's the, you know, that's the one where they go to Transylvania looking for Frankenstein, and the guy who played Lydia's dad makes fun of them.
Yeah, okay, that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, I want to see Janine Garofalo in the title role of Angie.
I mean, that'd be pretty great.
Yeah, better than Blondie's Small Assassin or whatever it was we just watched.
Blondie's.